Good evening. It is very good to be here with you as we get into the book of Proverbs. Our English title of Proverbs is derived from a Hebrew word that basically it refers to some sort of object lesson that is based upon using an analogy or a comparison, usually sort of a short, punchy statement. It is designed to provide rules for life and to help to make them plain to us by providing that comparison or analogy. The book of Proverbs itself was written over quite a period of time. The majority were compiled by King Solomon, but there were others that were put together by the men of Hezekiah, we're told. King Hezekiah, of course, ruled a couple of hundred years after Solomon, a little over 200 years after Solomon, and some of those were put together, and various other wise men. We could look at the book of Proverbs as basically being divided into seven sections, and they're fairly easy to distinguish. The first section would be the introduction to the book of Proverbs, which consists of the first six verses and gives you the title and the purpose of the book. I'm going to be primarily reading to you this evening out of the Sansino translation, the Jewish translation of the book of Proverbs, similar to the King James, but you'll notice some differences. It says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel." And then it proceeds to tell us the purpose, these first six verses. To know wisdom and instruction, to comprehend the words of understanding, to receive the discipline of wisdom, justice and right and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion, that the wise man may hear and increase in learning, the man of understanding may attain unto wise counsels, to understand a proverb and a figure or a parable, that in that sense, to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. So this is really the purpose. And then, beginning in verse 7, on through the end of chapter 9, we have a discourse on the subject of understanding and wisdom. And most of the first nine chapters, starting with verse 7, on down to the end of chapter 9, takes us through that way, this discourse on knowledge and understanding. Now notice here, when you come to the end of chapter 9, chapter 10 and verse 1 starts out, begins a third section, the Proverbs of Solomon. Now, beginning here with chapter 10 on through most of chapter 22, we have a collection of what we think of as actually Proverbs, these little short statements. A wise son makes a glad father, a foolish son is the grief of his mother. These contrasts and comparisons. And that third section takes you all the way down into chapter 22 and actually would end up in chapter 22, verse 16. And then chapter 22, verse 17, starts the next collection of Proverbs. These are, as it says in Proverbs 22:17, incline your ear and hear the words of the wise, or the wise ones, and apply your heart unto my knowledge. You remember chapter 10 and verse 1 started out as the Proverbs of Solomon. Now we have a general collection of the Proverbs, the sayings of the wise ones. And these sayings of the wise ones run down to the end of chapter 24, beginning in 22:17 and running on to the end of 24. And then notice here in Proverbs 25, verse 1. This is the third collection of Proverbs, and beginning here in chapter 25, this is section 5. Notice 25:1. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out. So now we're in a different section, and that carries you all the way down through the end of chapter 29. And Proverbs 30 is the sixth section of Proverbs, and that starts out 30:1, the words of Agur, the son of Jacob. And so these are the teachings here, and then chapter 31 starts out. That is the final section. This starts out chapter 31:1. The words of King Lemuel, the burden wherewith his mother corrected him. So this gives you the seven basic sections that are there. And Proverbs is written as a combination of discourses and these little short pithy statements. The technical word for it is aphorism. We'll just call them little short statements. It basically refers to a concise statement, usually a short, pointed sentence that makes some sort of a moral point. The first nine chapters of Proverbs are in discourse style, more of a narrative telling a story, and most of the rest of it, not all, but most of the rest of it consists of these little short, pithy statements. Now, there are different ways that these statements make their point. Sometimes they all employ some sort of parallelism to two things. Now, sometimes what they say is they use a synonymous parallel. In other words, they say the same thing a couple of different ways. Let's notice an example or two of that in Proverbs chapter 14, for instance. 14:19. It says, the evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Now, you see, you've got these two little parallel statements in the same verse, and you have something that's basically synonymous. And the evil bow before the good, the wicked at the gates of the righteous. It's a matter of emphasis by stating the same thing in a couple of different ways. That's one style that is used. Another is a contrast. See, verse 19 is sort of synonymous. It says the same thing in two different ways. Notice verse 20. The poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich has many friends. Well, now here you have a contrast, you know, that... a poor man, well, seems like a lot of people are ready to turn their back on him. Why? Well, he's not in a position to do a lot of favors for them. But the rich has many friends. Now, what kind of friends does he have? Well, of course, he has the kind that, you remember the story of the prodigal son. He had a lot of friends. As long as he was buying all the drinks, he had a bar full of friends. It was when he ran out of money that things began to change, because all of a sudden he was poor. And the poor is hated even of his own neighbors. So sometimes you see the point is made in a contrast. Sometimes synonymous, as in verse 19, sometimes a contrast. And sometimes a different way is what's called a synthetic. In other words, the second clause continues the thought of the first. An example of that would be in Proverbs 19. The first part of the proverb makes a point, and the second just continues the same point on, sort of builds on it. Notice in verse 11, Proverbs 19:11, it is the discretion of a man to be slow in anger, slow to anger. And it is his glory to pass over a transgression. Now, you're saying two different things, but it's not, they're not opposites, and it's not just saying exactly the same thing in different ways. It's the second half of the proverb builds on the first one. See, it is the discretion of a man to be slow to anger. You know, that's good. He's making a choice, making a good choice, not flying off the handle, and building even further on that, it's his glory to pass over a transgression. Not only is it good to be slow to anger, not just fly off the handle and say something, but in some cases to just totally pass over the transgression, just go on from it. So that is another form of Proverbs. Let's look at a fourth, which is sort of comparative. And we can go to Proverbs 10 for that. Proverbs 10:26. As vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that sing. Now, I guess most of us have... you ever noticed if you got a campfire or something and whatever side you're standing on, it seems like the wind always changes to put the smoke in your direction? You know, what happens? What does smoke to the eyes do? Well, it burns your eyes. It's an irritant. So you keep wanting to get out of the smoke. Well, he says as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send you. You send somebody that's lazy and undependable, you're going to wind up and be just as irritated as you can be before it's all over with, because you won't get the job done, or you won't get it done in a timely way, and you're better off to just do it yourself than to send him, because you'll be far more frustrated. Well, that's what he's saying. See, he's drawing a comparison. Just like smoke to the eyes, to send a sluggard to do your task, you know, it's going to irritate you. So what we find in the book of Proverbs is these little short statements. Normally a verse is sort of complete in and of itself in most cases. And they either say the same thing in different ways, or they make a contrast, or they build, where the first part says something and then the second part, you know, carries it a little further, builds on it, or it simply compares two things. So Proverbs consists of information that is presented in a particular way. You know, different parts of the Bible are presented in different ways, and we can learn from it. The book of Proverbs is, you know, a section that lends itself to memory work. We went through Psalms, and we saw that Psalms has an awful lot in there that is to sort of help us process through our thoughts and our feelings and our experiences. The book of Proverbs is education for life. There's no book in the Bible that is more directly written for young people than the book of Proverbs. You know, one of the key words used in the book of Proverbs is the word wisdom. And this is sometimes, we wonder, you know, what does wisdom mean? One way of translating it is skillfulness. You know, back, I'll give you an example. The word is translated for... that's translated wisdom in the book of Proverbs. Let me show you an example back in Exodus 31. Exodus 31 and verse 6. And I, behold, I have given with him Aholiab, who is from the tribe of Dan. In the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, I have put wisdom, that they may make all that I have commanded you. Well, now, the word wisdom here, if you read in this context, it talks about this particular man, Bezalel, up in verse 2. And verse 3, I filled with the Spirit of God in wisdom. And what kind of wisdom? Well, to devise, verse 4, cunning works, work in gold and silver and brass, setting of stones. In other words, skill. Now, wisdom, as used in the book of Proverbs, refers to skill in living, skill in holy living. You know, Proverbs, a couple of the key words that are used here are probably three key words in the book of Proverbs that keep popping up. One is wisdom, another is instruction, and another is understanding. You know, you could say that wisdom and instruction, which are often put together, the word instruction comes from the Hebrew word musar, and it refers to discipline. It's a word that can, in some cases, refer to punishment, as in God chastens whom he loves. But in the book of Proverbs, it frequently refers to self-discipline. It's a fascinating word to me, because if you look up the history of the word and what it literally means, it literally refers to guidelines. And in other words, if you want something straight, a tree or something, you can attach certain guidelines to it that hold it straight, that anchor it. I remember a number of years ago that there was an ice storm that came across East Texas and North Louisiana, and the area there where my mother lives in North Louisiana. There was an ice storm. Well, and she has a lot of trees in her yard. Some of them are pine trees and some are hardwood. Well, you know what happens when you have an ice storm, you have pine trees. They've got all these needles on them, so they really get heavy. And what we had was, in some cases, these big old pine limbs broke off or fell down on some of the small little oaks that had been planted. And there was one in particular. The pine trees were a mess. We cleaned up the limbs, but when we cleaned up all the limbs, there was one little oak that was really distorted because one of these big pine limbs had fallen on it, and it was distorted in terms of the way that it was. And my brother and I were trying to get it cleaned up, and so what we wound up doing was he got up there as high as he could, and he tied a rope as high as he could up in this little oak tree, and then we pulled it tight. We couldn't pull it all the way straight, and we got it as tight as we could, tied it off to an iron peg that we'd driven in the ground. Well, a little while later, a day or two later, that there was a little slack in the rope. You could put another couple of turns. We worked with it, I don't remember, probably a period of months, two or three months before we finally took the rope off, maybe a little longer than that. You couldn't go there and tell now that one of those trees had ever been distorted, but it was at one time. You know, he sort of pulled it straight. Well, that's literally the meaning of the word musar, discipline. That's, you know, you have to have guidelines for life. And I think that you know, it's funny how you go through things and sometimes you learn from the experience. I've gotten a lot out of that. In fact, that story shows up in, what is it, lesson 20, I think, of the Bible study course. One talks about rearing a godly family. And in one section in there, this Hebrew word musar. Because, you know, what we all need is we need guidelines. We need guidelines for life. We need things to hold us straight. And, of course, what happens, of course, just like with a tree, you know, the older the tree gets and it matures, it hardens, and it gets where you can't bend it that way anymore. So the book of Proverbs is filled with information that will help to provide skill in life, discipline and holy living, and understanding or discernment, the ability to distinguish between things. The ability to draw contrasts. You know, that's pretty vital. When you look at the book of Proverbs as it opens, by the way, I didn't ask if anybody needs study questions this evening. Does anybody need that? You look here in the beginning of the book, we've already looked at the introduction, that the introduction basically sets out what it is that, what's the purpose. And we're told in verse 4, it's to give prudence to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. You know, one thing about living life is you gain experience. Now, one of the reasons when you're young, you haven't had a chance to live a whole lot of life. And so you haven't had a chance to have a lot of experience in things, which means that young people are more vulnerable to being taken advantage of, being misled or cheated in some way, because they have not accumulated maybe the wisdom or the skill to navigate life. And one of the things about the book of Proverbs is it will give you a lifetime of experience, but it'll give it to you when you're young and you've got life in front of you. There's a lot of things you can learn by experience. The trouble is, if you learn it all by experience, then by the time you've learned it all, you're so old that you know all the things you wish you had known 30, 40, 50 years earlier when you were making choices. So as we get into it, the starting point, we're told, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and discipline. You know, that's a pretty crucial thing. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The starting point is to really stand in awe of God. If you're not impressed with God, then there's no telling what you'll wind up getting into. People who are foolish despise wisdom and discipline. They don't value it. He goes on, hear, my son, the instruction of your father, and forsake not the teaching of your mother. This word instruction or discipline, the discipline of your father, the teaching of your mother, it's just like an ornament on your head. You know, if you really will receive the guidance and the instruction, then you're a lot better off, and it will adorn you for life. Now he gets into this discourse. He said, my son, over and over in Proverbs, and particularly in this first part, you find that Solomon addresses my son. It's written, here is advice that he gave to his son. By the way, I think this is an interesting thing to think about as you look at Proverbs. You know, fathers like to give advice to their children. Mothers do too. And that's good. You can't get any better advice than what Solomon gave. I mean, God gave him a gift of wisdom, right? Solomon gave terrific advice. But there was a problem, particularly in his latter years. He set a horrible example. Now, when you get into the book of 1 Kings and you read the story of his son, Rehoboam, took the throne, did Rehoboam turn out to be the smartest fellow you ever thought of? No, you know, Rehoboam really sort of made a mess of things. What you find, I think, as you put the story together, is that Solomon's example had more impact than all of his advice. If you think of it that way, much of this book of Proverbs was written from Solomon to Rehoboam. Rehoboam was his oldest son, the one that was going to succeed him on the throne. But Rehoboam didn't get the point, partly because Dad wasn't living the point. He was talking the point. And I think that is a tremendous a lesson to all of us as parents to realize that what we do is going to have more impact than what we say. So he says, my son, look, if sinners entice you, don't consent. They say, hey, come on, get with us. You know, boy, we got this plan, and we're gonna get this. We're going to get rich. Come on with us. We'll just, end of verse 13, we'll fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. We'll all have one purse. We'll just divide everything up. Boy, you know, get in with us. One of the problems that clearly comes, that this is written to warn about, is, son, don't run around with the wrong kind of people. Don't hang around with people. Don't follow people who are trying to entice you, get you in trouble. Oh, they make big promises. Oh, man, we're going to have so much fun. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Says, uh-oh, don't do it. Verse 15, my son, don't walk in the way with them. Restrain your foot from their path. Their feet run to evil. They make haste to shed blood. You know, so it talks about people who are greedy. Verse 19, it takes away the life of the owners. You know, somebody is greedy, they're going to get themselves in trouble. So on the one hand, you're enticed by people who are promising you something for nothing. They're promising you a good time. They're promising you to get rich. The contrast of sinners enticing you, trying to get you off to the side, is verse 20, wisdom cries aloud in the street. She utters her voice in the broad places. Not trying to entice you off in a corner. Hey, psst, come here, let me tell you something. No, wisdom announces in the public places. She calls at the head of the noisy street. She says, wisdom here is personified as a woman. It's like a woman who is speaking, saying, verse 22, how long, you thoughtless, will you love thoughtlessness? How long will scorners delight in scorning and fools hate knowledge? You know, one of the characteristics of a fool is he doesn't want to learn. In fact, you point out something to him and you probably make him mad. And so wisdom says in verse 24, because I've called and you refused, I've stretched out my hand and no man attended, you have set at naught all my counsel and would none of my reproof. In your calamity, I'm going to laugh. You know, wisdom in effect says, look, I've got the information and it's being made available to you. If you won't listen, you're going to get in trouble, and then when you get in trouble, it's going to be too late. Verse 28, it says, then they will call me, but I will not answer. They'll seek me earnestly, but they won't find me. For that they hated knowledge, they did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel, despised all my reproof. And so he talks about that. He goes on into chapter 2. My son, if you will receive my words and lay up my commandments with you, if you will make your ear attend unto wisdom and your heart inclined to discernment, if you'll call for understanding, verse 4, if you seek her as silver, search for her as hidden treasures, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. You know, what is valuable to us, we pursue. And what he says is, you need to look at understanding and discernment, wisdom. You need to place great value. It's like silver, gold, precious jewels. If you attach great value to that, then you'll find it. Because if you ever notice that if you really want to do something, you usually find a way. If you don't want to do something, you ever notice how many excuses you can come up with as to why it's too long, too hard, too far, too much trouble? It's amazing, you know, what our desire has to do with what we seek and what we find. So it's talking about placing great value on wisdom. See, the Lord gives wisdom, verse 6. Out of his mouth comes knowledge and discernment. So real wisdom and knowledge, discernment simply means the ability to distinguish or to make choices. That comes from God. In verse 7, he lays up sound wisdom for the upright. He's a shield to them that walk in integrity, that he may guard the paths of justice. So it talks about you'll understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. Verse 11, discretion will watch over you. Discernment shall guard you to deliver you from the way of the evil. See, discretion and discernment have to do with making good choices. A person who is discreet is someone who sort of knows when to do this and when to do that. They have this ability to make choices. And to discern means to distinguish between. You know, one thing you find, that life doesn't always come with truth in packaging. In other words, bad ideas don't show up with a little sign on them saying, I'm a bad idea. No, what you find is most times bad ideas are presented as though they're good ideas. Someone says, oh man, I got this deal. You can't miss. You know, I remember years ago, I was just a kid and we lived out in a rural area. My dad had a little country grocery store, and there was this fella who was out from the big city, you know, all the way from Shreveport. That was really the big city. And he was going all over the community. I don't remember exactly what it was he was peddling, but it had to do with some investment scheme, and boy, it sounded, you just couldn't lose. And I remember him sitting out there at the store, and I remember him giving Daddy the sales pitch, and he had already been all over the community, and several of the prominent folks in the community had invested with him, and I listened to it, and boy, I was so impressed, I just knew we were going to be rich. And he made his sales pitch, and finally when he got to the end of it, my father looked at him and he said, well, He said, I don't know about all this, but he said, I know one thing. If that deal was as good as you say it is, you wouldn't be out here trying to peddle it to me in Taylor, Louisiana. Never would have gotten out of Shreveport. So he didn't invest in it. I just knew we had lost a fortune. But you know what? A few months later, I don't remember, 6 or 8 months, whatever it was, the whole thing turned out to be a fiasco, and the people who had invested in it lost everything they had invested. And you see, the ability to make choices, to discern. And one of the things that salesmen learn, you know, there's several things that salesmen often try to appeal to, and one of the things that they often try to appeal to is greed. Oh, boy, you're going to, you know, I've got something for you, and this is just, this is the best deal. You're going to get rich off of it. Well, the book of Proverbs goes on. It talks about those that leave the paths of righteousness, verse 13, and to walk in the ways of darkness. They're crooked in their ways and perverse in their paths, verse 15. So one of the purposes of Proverbs is to deliver you from the sinners who try to entice you, and the people who come along and promise you something for nothing. The other thing it's to deliver you from, deliver a young man from, verse 16, is from the strange woman, the alien woman that makes smooth her words. She forsakes the Lord of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. In other words, she's immoral. She's not faithful to the marriage covenant. But, you know, the danger, the two biggest dangers that young men find themselves in is, one, getting enticed with the wrong kind of men who are going to get them in trouble if they follow them. The other is getting entangled with the wrong kind of women. We're also going to get them in trouble. May just be a little different kind of trouble. You know, the point is that while there are different ways of getting in trouble, the result is that it's still trouble. And you don't want to be running with the wrong crowd. And it goes on and it says, the purpose, the desire, see, verse 20, that you may walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of righteousness. Because the upright will dwell in the land, the wholehearted will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off. So he goes on in chapter 3. My son, forget not my teaching. Let your heart keep my commandments. What will wisdom add? Length of days, years of life, peace? See, let not kindness and truth forsake you. Those are things you want to hang on to. And they'll lead you to verse 4, finding grace and good favor in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He'll direct your paths. Is it a safe bet to go through life following your feelings? Well, says no, don't lean to your own understanding. You know, you think about it. What do most people follow in life? Well, different people, different personalities may follow different things, but it basically boils down to about three things. Some people follow the crowd. They just do what everybody else is doing. You know, if everybody's doing this, well, they do it too. They want to fit in with the crowd. Well, that gets you in trouble. Some people follow their feelings. They're very emotional, very intuitive, and they just follow their feelings and their impulses. Well, that can get you in a lot of trouble too. You know, people have gotten into everything from murder to adultery to you name it because they were following their feelings. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Other people are not so emotional and impulsive. They're more thoughtful and calculating. They sit back, sort of figure the angle, you know, and look at it and calculate and decide sort of pros and cons. But you see, the problem with all of that is if you lean to your own understanding, whether it's your own emotional feelings or even just your own calculated ideas, if you just follow the way that seems right to you, it's going to get you in trouble. What you need to do is follow. See, the alternative to those is to follow God. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. See, acknowledge Him. He'll direct your path. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. Some people are too smart for their own good. You know, they just know they got the whole thing figured. That'll never happen to me. Well, a lot of people who didn't think it had ever happened to them that have wound up in that case. Verse 9, honor the Lord with your substance, with the first fruits of your increase, and so shall your barns be filled with plenty. You know, the book of Proverbs talks about things that are pretty up to date. It talks about sex, it talks about marriage, it talks about money, it talks about career, it talks about friendships, it talks about a lot of things. And the first key that it gives about money, about prosperity, is put God first. You know, there's a lot of instructions Proverbs gives you about getting ahead financially, but where it starts is right here. It says, put God first. Honor Him with your substance and the first fruits of your increase. That is the first key to prosperity. It'd be interesting to just go through and make a study of the book of Proverbs of keys to prosperity. This is the first one. It says, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, or spurn you His correction. You know, Paul quotes this back in Hebrews, in Hebrews 12, but here's where it starts. God works with us. He loves us. Whom the Lord loves, He corrects, even as a father the son in whom He delights. You know, if a father really loves his son, he's going to correct him because he wants him to grow up, in a positive way. He wants to see good things for him. God loves us. And so God works with us to correct us. Happy is the man that finds wisdom. You know, it's better than gold or silver, more precious than rubies, we're told. Why is wisdom so valuable? Verse 16, the length of days is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. You know, wisdom, making good choices in life, that leads to a lot of positive things. Her ways are ways of pleasantness. Verse 18, she's a tree of life to them that lay hold on her. You know, the Lord, by wisdom, verse 19, founded the earth. By understanding, He established the heavens. You know, God made choices and designed things and set it all to work, created the laws that regulate the universe, and everything happens according to what God established in that way. Verse 21, my son, let not them depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. And it says, you know, if you do this, then you'll walk in the way securely. Verse 23, when you lie down, you won't have to be afraid. Verse 25, be not afraid of sudden terror, neither of the destruction of the wicked when it comes. Well, why would you have peace of mind? Would you have security? Well, because you're pursuing the way of wisdom. The Lord, verse 26, will be your confidence. You can have confidence because you're following a way of life. Verse 27, part of this way of life, don't withhold good from him to whom it's due when it's in the power of your hand to do it. Don't say to your neighbor, go and come again, tomorrow I'll help you. You know, if you're in a position to help somebody, well, help them when the opportunity comes up. You know, don't devise evil against your neighbor. Verse 31, envy not the man of violence. Don't choose any of his ways. Verse 33, the curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked. He blesses that. He blesses the habitation of the righteous. The wise man, verse 35, shall inherit honor, but as for the fools, they carry away shame. Chapter 4 starts out with a similar type theme. It says, hear, you children, the instruction of a father. Attend and know understanding. I'll give you good doctrine. Forsake not my teaching. He said, you know, I was a son to my father, tender and an only one in the sight of my mother. Here's a little bit of what David taught Solomon. He said, let your, verse 4, he taught me, let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live, get wisdom, get understanding. You know, David taught Solomon the importance of that. So when Solomon became king and God said, what would you like? Solomon asked for wisdom. So we're told that this is the starting point. Verse 7, the beginning of wisdom is get wisdom. Yes, with all you're getting, get understanding. Extol her and she'll exalt you. She'll bring you to honor if you embrace her. You know, if you, wisdom, skill of life, skillful living and skillfully navigating through life, this skills for living is something that will advance you. That it leads to a lot of things. It says in verse 13, take fast hold of instruction, let her not go. Keep her, she's your life. You know, one thing that comes through in the book of Proverbs is certainly the value of education. The right kind of education. Because it so much of Proverbs involves the importance of learning and of gaining insight, of gaining knowledge, and that can be applied in any area of your life. They says in verse 14, enter not into the path of the wicked, walk not the way of evil men, avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, pass on. They don't sleep until they've done evil. Their sleep is taken away unless they cause someone to fall. You know, they're just not going to rest well until they've gotten in trouble. What you better do is stay away from them. That's what the writer says here. Says the path of righteousness is as the light of dawn, verse 18. It shines more and more. It gets brighter and brighter. You know, if you pursue righteousness, things will get more and more clear to you. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They're going to stumble and trip and won't even know what tripped them. So, my son, listen to my words. Don't let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. They're life to those that find them. Verse 23, above all that you guard, keep your heart, for out of it are the issues of life. Talks about again in verse 27, turn not to the right hand or to the left, remove your foot from evil. Make a straight path through life. Don't get off track and get into trouble. Again, the same theme, chapter 5, verse 1, my son, attend unto my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, that your lips may keep knowledge. It says, the lips of a strange woman drop honey, her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood and sharp as a two-edged sword. You know, her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on the grave. So, again, he says in verse 8, remove far from her. Come not near the door of her house, lest you give your vigor unto others and your years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with your strength and your labors be in the house of an alien. You moan when your end comes, when your flesh and your body are consumed, and say, oh, how I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof. It's interesting, the progression that he describes here, because he said, you know, what happens if you get tangled up with immorality? He's talking here to a young man. He says, remove far away from this immoral woman. Don't get near, verse 8, because you will give your talks about your years unto the cruel. Strangers will be filled with your increase. You know, a lot of people right on down to modern day have found out about this. They wind up a great deal of what they earn is being paid out in child support, and some other man is living off of it. Costly from a financial standpoint. You're going to give your honor to others, you know, you'll wind up losing your reputation, you'll wind up costing you a lot of money, and if you keep pursuing that way, sooner or later, your flesh and your body will be consumed. You know, you get some disease, and then at that point, you say, oh, I wish I'd listened. Well, it's a little late. The alternative, see, it says in verse 15, drink waters out of your own cistern and running waters out of your own well. Now, you know, that's what that's talking about is what it says in verse 18, let your fountain be blessed and have joy of the wife of your youth. See, drinking waters out of your own cistern and out from your own well simply means that you're faithful to your own mate and not out with all sorts of other people. And, you know, as is so common, people are out looking for a thrill. Well, he describes here the consequence that, verse 20, why will you, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of an alien, of a stranger? You know, be loyal and loving to your own mate. Here to a young man, he says, you know, be loyal, be faithful to the wife of your youth. Don't get tangled up with someone else. The ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord. You know, God takes note of everything we do. Now in chapter 6, he goes on and he says, my son, if you become surety for a stranger, if you've struck your hands for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your mouth, you're caught by the words of your mouth, do this, you know, go humble yourself and deliver yourself. Well, here's another key to prosperity. He says, don't be quick to get into deals. Certainly don't take on, don't become obligated for someone else. You can wind up having to pay. You know, it's, I think a good rule of thumb is if you can't afford to make a gift of it, you can't afford to make a loan of it. Because at least my experience over the years is that an awful lot of loans have turned into gifts. If you can't afford to loan, if you can't afford to give it, you better not loan it. Don't go out and co-sign or sign up with something. You can wind up and be obligated for debts that you didn't incur, somebody else did, and you're going to help them out, and you get yourself in a bind that you can't get out of. That's the point here in the beginning part of Proverbs 6. You know, just giving. There are plenty of places in Proverbs that encourage you to help people that are in need of help. But, you know, it's a matter of using wisdom and of recognizing what you're in a position to do, what you can afford to do. So he says, if you get yourself in a spot like that, then you better not do anything else until you extricate yourself. Then in verse 6, he says, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Now, you know, an ant's not very big, and so an ant can't have a very, very big brain. But an ant may not have a very big brain, but an ant is a lot smarter than some people. And then what can you learn from an ant? He says, consider her ways and be wise. You know, the ant just does what the ant is programmed to do. You and I have choices. And God has built and designed certain things into creation. He says, look at it and think about it. What is it you can think about the ant? Well, the ant doesn't have a chief, overseer, or ruler, and yet she provides her meat, her bread in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. You know, one little ant doesn't have another little ant up there with a whip, sort of cracking the whip. You know, hurry up, little ant, punch in your time clock. You're running 5 minutes late. Ants just do those things. They're out scurrying around. You see them, you know. If you want to find ants, all you need to do is have a picnic. They all show up. But, you know, the ant provides her food. She gathers stuff in, and they bury it away. And so when the bad weather comes, they're taken care of. So we can learn from an ant. An ant is productive. An ant takes advantage of the opportunities that are there. That's why it provides the food in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest, because that's when it's available. You know, in a lot of areas of the world, there's not much around come December, January, February. That's a little late. You know, and so it is in life. There are times when there's opportunity in life, and there's times when things are sort of bleak. And so what you have to do is take advantage of the opportunity when it's there. Summertime, harvest time. Verse 9, how long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of sleep? Little slumber, a little sleep, little folding of the hands. Your poverty will come like a runner. Your want as an armed man. So, another aspect of it, you know, several things you've learned here from the ant. One is the ant is self-motivated. The ant gets up and does what the ant's supposed to do. That's the way they're programmed. The ant takes advantage of opportunity. When the summer comes, when the harvest time is there, the ant is gathering food, takes advantage of opportunity. The third thing we learn here is that, you know, you can't be lazy. You've got to get up and get with it. Lay around and sleep and just, you know, sort of pass the time, and you'll wind up in trouble. So it goes on, and it describes people who are always trying to put one over on someone. Verse 13, he that winks with his eye and scrapes with his feet and points with his finger. Frowardness is in his heart. He devises evil continually. He sows discord. He's always up to something. He's always trying to put something over on somebody. He's, you know, he'll tell one person something, look over at somebody else and wink, sort of make some signal, hey, I'm getting ready to put one over on this guy. You know what's going to happen? His calamity is going to come suddenly. He's going to be broken without remedy. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked thoughts, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness that breathes out lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. You know, here are things that God absolutely hates. It leads to trouble. My son, keep the commandment of your father. Don't forsake the teaching of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them about your neck. Wear them like an ornament. Wear it like jewelry. If you do, if you take it with you everywhere, then it'll lead you when you walk, watch over you when you lie down, and talk with you when you wake up. The commandment is a lamp, and the teaching is light. The reproofs of instruction are the way of life. So God's word here is compared to being a lamp or a light. It's there to illuminate the pathway of life. It will do what? Verse 24, keep you from the evil woman, from the smoothness of the alien tongue. Lust not after her beauty in your heart, neither let her captivate you with her eyelids. On account of a harlot, a man is brought to a loaf of bread by the adulteress, but the adulteress hunts for the precious life. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned, and you walk on hot coals and not have your feet scorched? So is he that goes into his neighbor's wife. You see, it's one of the purposes of God's laws, God's words. That's what we're told, verse 23, the commandment's a lamp, teaching is a light. What will it do? It'll keep you from the evil woman. Keep you from getting up, mixed up with someone who is immoral. Warns you, don't be just attracted to her beauty. A lot of people have been, you know, captivated by someone, the look of someone's eye, captivated, as it says, with her eyelids, which a lot of cases like this aren't even hers, you know. So people are led away captive and bankrupted, brought to a loaf of bread, as it says, you know, just wind up in a mess. You can't take fire to your bosom and not get burned. You know, there are things that are going to have consequences in life. Tremendous advice to a young man. You know, that's what it's really written for. It's written telling a young man, because what does he stand? Well, he's right at the beginning of life. He's got to make decisions about education. He's got to make decisions about marriage. He's got to make decision, you know, about the whole area of morality and whether he's going to wait for a wife or whether he's going to get tangled up in what others are doing. He's going to look at career, going to look at how to prosper and to get ahead. So all these things are contained here. Verse 32 says, he that commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. You know, he destroys his own soul. He lacks understanding because, you know, he really doesn't see where, he does not grasp where it's going to lead him, what's going to happen. It shows a lack of understanding. Goes on and talks in verse 34, you see, you know, you get into a lot of trouble. Jealousy is the rage of a man. You'll not spare in the day of vengeance. You can get yourself shot. You can get yourself hurt. Going on into chapter 7, my son, keep my words. Lay up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live. My teaching is the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the table of your heart. Say unto wisdom, you're my sister. Call understanding your kinswoman, that they may keep you from the strange woman, the alien woman that makes smooth her words. You know, it'll keep you out of trouble, keep you... You know, one of the things you find out is that human nature hadn't changed a whole lot. Look how much of the time the opening chapters in Proverbs, written as advice as young man from a father to his son, and you can turn it around and apply the same principles written to a young lady. But you know, it's interesting, over and over, the warnings that you run through this whole section of Proverbs is warning young men not to get tangled up with the wrong kind of women. That's tells you human nature hadn't changed a whole lot. Young men needed a warning about this 3,000 years ago, and they still do. And I think the irony of it all is Solomon's the one that wrote the warning. and he was not real good at taking his own advice. Gave tremendous advice. He says, boy, it's going to mess you up. But then, you know, he didn't listen to his own advice and did it mess him up, you bet. You know, it talks about someone who can be very smooth, very seductive. So he describes, he says that I was looking through the window, verse 6, and I beheld among the young men a young man void of understanding. I looked out there and I saw a fellow that wasn't very smart. He was passing through the street near her corner. He went the way to her house in the twilight, in the evening of the day, in the blackness of night, in the darkness. There met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and wily of heart. Riotous and rebellious, her feet abide not in her house. She's in the streets, in the broad place. Lies wait at every corner. She caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face she said, oh boy, you know, we got plenty of stuff at the house. My husband is gone. Just come on over. I've got everything fixed up. Boy, can we have a party. It's interesting, you know, it uses this term, a woman, verse 10, with the attire of a harlot. You know, the scriptures talk about in the New Testament the contrast of a woman who has the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. Talks about, a godly woman who is modestly attired. You know, the harlot described here, this immoral young woman, is the very opposite of everything that God values. I think it is, it's interesting when you look at our whole society, who sets the fashion pace. Just go up to a junior high school and look at the way the girls are dressed. I mean, it's a pretty sad state of things, because who's setting the pace for that? I mean, a lot of what is, a lot of what passes for fashion, that's the kind of thing that, in years past, you drive along certain sections of town and you see women who are dressed like that standing on the corner, and you knew what it was that they were peddling. I mean, that was pretty obvious. They had a certain look, a certain dress, a certain style, a certain way, and that was why they were out there, and that was why they presented themselves that way, and people would stop. And so here it describes same old thing way back then. And so you find this attitude that is projected in everything from dress style and the way of presenting, the way a woman presents herself, to the way she acts. And it just describes, it's a good section to go through, realizing that what's being described is the very opposite of what God wants us to be and desires. But here describes young people falling into these traps. They've done it for thousands of years. So she invites him to come on over to the house. Verse 17, I've perfumed my bed. Let's take our fill of love until the morning. Verse 19, my husband's not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He won't be back for a long time. And so verse 21, with her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the blandishment of her lips, she enticed him away. He goes after her straightway like an ox goes to the slaughter. You know how an ox goes to the slaughter? An old ox isn't very smart. He doesn't realize what's going to happen to him until he gets there. I think that certain animals God made for food, he didn't give them a whole lot of brain power, because if they were very smart, they'd figure out what was about to happen to them, and life wouldn't be very happy. But, an old cow, an old ox is a pretty dumb animal. They just go right along munching on something and don't realize what's going to happen until it happens. And that's the way some people are. They go along and they're about as smart as a cow. They sort of go along. Doesn't dawn on them until it happens. And so, just like verse 23, a bird hastening to the snare, and he doesn't know that it's at the cost of his life. Set a trap, snare for a bird. And he comes down there to get the food. Doesn't dawn on him what's about to happen. The whole thing's about to snare him. It's about to catch him. There are people who go through life, young men here, as it describes, and they don't have a clue as to what they're on the verge of getting themselves into, what's about to happen. So he says, verse 24, now therefore, you children, hearken to me, attend to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths. She's cast down many wounded. A mighty host are all her slain. Her house is the way to the grave, going down to the chambers of death. Well, that leads to trouble. Some awfully strong warnings here about the dangers of immorality, that, what's going to happen. And you look at it, you realize human nature hasn't changed in all these years. Here's something written 3,000 years ago, and it's like it was written, 3 days ago. So in chapter 8, he goes on, he says, doesn't wisdom call? And understanding put forth her voice. In the top of the high places, by the way, where the paths meet, she stands. Beside the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming of the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. So here we find, earlier in Proverbs, we find the wicked woman described. Here in chapter 8, we find wisdom personified as a woman. And not sneaking around the corner, but calling in the high places, in the public areas. And so the voice of wisdom calls and says in verse 5, O you thoughtless, understand prudence. You fools, be of an understanding heart. I'll speak excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. Information is available to us. None of us are born smart. You ever think about that? About the only thing you know when you're born is you're hungry, and sometimes it takes a little while for mama to get you properly acclimated to where you can even find your dinner. But then you do, and then you know something. And you're hungry, and you know that you're ready to eat. And, you don't know a whole lot. Everything has to be learned. Little animals, you watch little calf, and within a short time, he's up wobbling around on his legs. Little baby. It's a long time before they're even crawling, much less walking. We're all born without knowing very much. There's no disgrace to not knowing much. The disgrace is being unwilling to learn. The point that Solomon is making here in Proverbs 8 is information is available. There's wisdom available. Verse 7, my mouth shall utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There's nothing perverse or crooked. That's the voice of wisdom speaking. They're all plain to him that understands and right to him that finds knowledge. Receive my instruction, wisdom says. You know, choose knowledge rather than gold. Why is knowledge more valuable than gold? Well, you give a fool a lot of money, it's not long before he lost it. If you have knowledge, then you understand, one, how to get the gold, and two, how to manage it and use it and take care of it and hold on to it. You know, so often somebody wins some big amount of money, it's usually not very long until they've lost it. They don't know how to handle it. And it goes on and says, wisdom, verse 11, is better than rubies. All things desirable are not to be compared unto her. If you really understand, if you have skill to navigate life, then you've got something more valuable than anything that you could buy. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. In other words, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. I find out knowledge of devices. It's a little bit of an awkward or knowledge of discretion. The idea is that I deliberating, drawing proper distinctions. That's wisdom and prudence, or wisdom and discretion, that's the sense of it, that is good choices. Wisdom and making good choices sort of dwell together, and we'll be able to make proper distinctions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate. You see, if you really stand in awe of God, you're going to hate what's evil. Counsel is mine, sound wisdom. I'm understanding. Power is mine. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me earnestly shall find me. Speaking here of wisdom. You know, wisdom leads to making sound decisions. That's the basis by which good government is exercised. It is, wisdom is described as loving those that love wisdom. You know, if you love it, you seek it, and it's there for you. Riches and honor are with me, enduring riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yes, than fine gold. Verse 20, I walk in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice, that I may cause those that love me to inherit sustenance, that I may fill their treasuries. The Lord made me as the beginning of his way, the first of his works of old. You know, the first thing that before God made the physical universe, God set in motion laws that regulate life. And wisdom, the whole concept of skill. This is something God set in motion. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, before ever the earth was. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the beginning of the dust of the world, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he set a circle upon the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above and the fountains of the deep showed their might, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not transgress his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, I was with him. I was by him. You know, I was there. Wisdom personified here. Wisdom was made from the beginning. The starting point before the physical creation, God set in motion certain laws to regulate life and a whole pattern, a whole way of things. That was established from the beginning. You know, all this debate we've got now, and if you listen to the mainstream networks, not a whole lot of debate because they give one side of it, but the big push on this so-called gay marriage. Mr. Meredith made comment during the conference something about that, and he said, you know, I don't like the word gay at all, because he said most of the ones I've known are anything but gay. They're miserable. They're unhappy. And it's not, you know, even the very name of it is though somehow this is where all the excitement and the fun is. You know, all this stuff about homosexual marriage, well, it's like they don't have a clue what marriage is. Where did marriage come from? Is marriage simply the invention of man? Who decides what marriage is? Where does marriage come from? Well, you see, they've thrown away the fear of the Lord. They don't really stand in awe of God. They're not seeking His definition. They're not seeking His guidance. So they pursue their own. And you know, it's going to leave them empty. It's not going to solve the problems. It's not going to produce what they're after. Wisdom is described here, is there from the beginning. So he says, you children, verse 32, hearken unto me. Happy are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction, be wise, refuse it not. Happy is the man that hearkens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my door. Whoso finds me finds life and obtains favor of the Lord. He that misses me wrongs his own soul. All that hate me love death. You see, hear wisdom, hear instruction, as it says in verse 33, the Hebrew word musar, discipline. Be wise. You know, be guided. Allow yourself to be guided in the right way. Chapter 9, verse 1, wisdom has built her house. She's hewn out her seven pillars, prepared her food, she's mingled her wine, she's furnished her table, sent forth her maidens and calls upon the highest places of the city. So what we find is the whole first section of the book of Proverbs is sort of summarized here in chapter 9. All that's gone before under the form of two invitations, one issued by wisdom and one issued by folly. You know, that's the way it is as you go through life. Wisdom extends an invitation here, come over here. Folly extends an invitation and says, no, come over here. So it describes wisdom having prepared a feast. You know, built her palace and laid the table with food and now sends out the invitation. Verse 4, whoever's thoughtless, let him turn in here. For him that lacks understanding, she says, come eat of my bread. Forsake, verse 6, forsake thoughtlessness and live. Walk in the way of understanding. He that corrects a scorner gets to himself shame. He that reproves a wicked man becomes a block. Don't reprove a scorner lest he hate you. Reprove a wise man and he'll love you. One of the big differences between a fool and a wise man is the way they receive instruction. A foolish person is just going to get mad when you tell him. A wise man will love you. Why? Because, you see, the wise man knows that he's learned something. One of the things that a wise man knows is that he doesn't know everything. You know, somebody who's a know-it-all, you can't tell them anything. You try to tell them anything, they just get mad. Well, they're going to go through life pretty dumb. They're not going to learn because they reject knowledge. This is one of the great contrasts between valuing knowledge and hating it. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. By me your days shall be multiplied, the years of your life shall be increased. If you're wise, you're wise for yourself, and if you scorn, you alone shall bear it. The woman folly is riotous. She's thoughtlessness and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, on a seat in the high places of the city, to call them that pass by who go right on their ways. Who is thoughtless? Let him turn in here. As for him that lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen waters are sweet. Bread eaten in secret is pleasant. oh, you know, here, come on over here. Stolen waters are sweet. Somehow that to do something you're not supposed to, well, that's the best of all. Well, he knows not, you know, what is ahead. He's headed for serious trouble. He knows not that the dead are there. Her guests are in the depths of the grave, the depths of Sheol. You know, there's so much that is packed in here to the book of Proverbs. We see that standing in awe of God, that's the starting point for wisdom. Proverbs 1:7 tells us that. Young people are exhorted to listen to their parents' teaching and instruction. You go on through much of Proverbs 2, it shows discretion and understanding will protect a young person from the corrupting influences of the wrong kind of people, whether it's corrupt men or immoral women. You know, in Proverbs 3, we learn not to trust our own feelings, not to lean to our own understanding. Rather, acknowledge God. Proverbs 3:9 tells us the first key to prosperity is to honor God with the first fruits of your increase, to tithe. Wisdom, we're told in verse 15, is more precious than rubies. Wisdom and discretion will enhance our lives, told there in the latter part of Proverbs 3. Give security as we travel the path of life, freedom from fear and anxiety. You know, we put away the wrong things from our mouth. Proverbs 4:24 talks about lies and evil, slanderous words. You know, again, the exhortation is that immoral women might appear beautiful and desirable, but the result is bitter and painful. Find contentment with your wife. You know, it's pretty foolish, Proverbs 6 says, to obligate yourself from somebody else's debt. Tells us to learn from the ant. Tells us that God's laws and His commandments illuminate the way we need to travel through life. Proverbs 6:32 just emphasizes that, you know, when it all comes down to it, an adulterer lacks understanding. He hasn't considered the end result. You know, you have the picture of the harlot, the seductive, loud, rebellious, stubborn one, the very opposite of the godly woman. You know, when young men that get tangled up with that sort of thing, they're just about as smart as an ox being taken off to the slaughter, not knowing what comes next. You know, if you really stand in awe of God, Proverbs 8:13 says you'll hate evil. You know, when you find wisdom, you find life, because it leads there. Part of that is the willingness to learn, to take correction, to want to grow, to want to difference between resenting correction and loving instruction. You know, while things that are unlawful can sort of the forbidden fruit, as it were, that can look attractive, but the end result is trouble. You know, the book of Proverbs is filled with so many practical things. Next Bible study, we're going to continue on. We're going to go through Proverbs in three sections. And the next Bible study, we'll pick it up, Proverbs chapters 10 on through most of 22. So with that, we'll be concluded this evening.